I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we are on episode 49. And we are doing 7 of the 7 deadly sins.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. A movie I've been thrilled to watch for so long.
So long. You've been like, Caveman, please, when are we going to watch 7?
One of the few films that my parents, while we were watching it as a family, stopped it and went, go to your room. To the three of us. Yeah. And sent us all away so that they could finish it. Because my parents let us watch rated R movies when we were younger. And sometimes they regretted it.
And sometimes, I guess they had a line drawn somewhere.
I forget what the line was. But it was enough that I remember as a kid seeing the obese man. I think it was when they got the sloth, was when my parents were like, get out. And my mom specifically was like, nope, get out.
Nope, we're done with this.
Yeah.
Out. I don't need you guys seeing this.
And so my mom was like, you can't watch this movie. And I was like, okay. And so I didn't until the other day. And I wish I'd listened to my mom.
7 came out in 1995 and was directed by David Fincher, who we have done David Fincher twice so far with Fight Club and Gone Girl. And we've got him on here one more time. But he's done other movies such as The Game, Zodiac, Social Network, and The Killer was his most recent one. 7 was written by Andrew Kevin Walker, who also worked on 8mm, Sleepy Hollow, and also wrote The Killer with David Fincher. The music was Howard Shore. We love Howard Shore.
We love Shore. Howard Shore.
I mean,
he did the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Lord of the Rings trilogy is
flawless amount of music.
I mean, he got 2 Oscars for the music.
Yeah.
Actually, technically, he got 3 Oscars because he also got original song other than the score for Fellowship of the Ring and Return of the King. And because the Academy is a bunch of stupid heads, he did not even get nominated for 2 Towers.
Which is a shame, because although I like the music from Fellowship the most, I feel like the 2 Towers is just as good. But, you know, whatever. They were like, we're saving it for the 3rd one, guys. Like, settle down.
Well, that year, they had stated that you could no longer be nominated for a score if it's based off of a prior movie. So he has music in 2 Towers that has also music in...
But then what happens the year after when he's...
Well, because of the Academy voters and the public were so outraged.
Being like, what the fuck?
Because of the history of... I mean, John Williams... First of all, John Williams would only be nominated once and never...
And never again because all of his music is repetitive.
The very next year, he was nominated for Return of the King because they got rid of that dumb rule.
Well, you know what? He could have had a hat trick, and the Academy was like, no, no, no. And, you know, it's not the first time they made a stupid-ass decision. It won't be the last.
The movie Frida won Best Original Score.
That's a pretty legit score, though.
Road to Perdition was also nominated, and Road to Perdition music that's Thomas Newman.
Mm-hmm. I vaguely remember that music.
Also, Catch Me If You Can, speaking of John Williams, was also nominated. Elmer Bernstein had a...
Sorry, who?
Elmer Bernstein.
Who?
We'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
No, we won't. Howard Shore's worked on many a film, of course. You got Scanners and Videodrome in the beginning, along with The Fly. Then you've got Tom Hanks in Big, Signs of the Lambs, Mrs. Doubtfire, Philadelphia, Ed Wood, Dogma, The Cell, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The list just
He's
keeps
done
going.
Everything.
111 projects since the 70s.
Yeah.
Love Howard Shore's music.
Love Howard Shore. He's great. I did not particularly like the music in 7, and I could not tell you what it sounded like other than just jarring noise.
Well, that's the point.
But I do love Howard Shore.
It was very uneasy music. It was very dark.
Yeah, it was dark and edgy, like this whole fucking film is. Oh, look at us. We're edgy in a 90s way, and that's what this movie is.
Well, yeah, the 90s were edgy.
Yeah, and I don't like 90s edginess. Oh, so, spoiler alert there, folks, I'm not a big fan of this one.
You were giving away the ending too soon.
Yeah, you know what? Whose head in the box? Fucking Gwyneth Paltrow's head is in the box, and it's stupid.
Damn.
It's stupid.
Spoilers.
Don't watch the movie. It's bleak. Watch Silence of the Lambs instead.
The cinematography was done by Darius Kanji. He had also worked on The Beach and The Lost City of Z, starring Charlie Hunnam, Robert Pattinson, and Tom Holland. Really good movie if anybody out there wanted to see those three in a actually really interesting film. Then you got, he also did Okja, Bong Joon-ho's movie that's on Netflix. He also did the music video for Taylor Swift's Look What You Made Me Do.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty legit video.
And he's also, he also did the cinematography for a future movie that I'm really looking forward to, Mickey 17.
Yeah. Yeah, that looks weird, but fun.
A fun weird.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes has 7 and an 84% from critics and a 95 from audiences.
But what am I missing?
You're just not edgy enough.
Am I? Is that it?
Did you drink a Mountain Dew before you watched this
no,
movie?
No, I did not slam a Surge. And I did not beat my opponent in Pog before watching this film.
Oh, that's too bad.
I lost my slammer, so I was in a bad mood anyways. But no, I
had some really cool slammers.
Who didn't?
I had this gold one that actually had indentations for your fingertips.
Yeah.
And it was just this big, fat piece of metal.
And did it make all the difference?
All the difference in the world, of course.
Fucking Pog.
Pog.
Man, I would love to be given one of those tubes and just pop it open for the sound and then the smell and then to hold Pogs again and show our children and have them just be like, what the fuck?
I know I have them somewhere in this house. They're somewhere. It's a little black tube.
Yeah.
Really, it's the only tube I ever got. I had friends who had...
Oh, we had tubes.
Massive
plenty.
Ones, yeah. Like 4 feet long.
What a stupid fucking thing.
It was, but
I
miss
it. Oh, it was the 90s, though. It was a simpler time.
Seven was made for $33 million, which makes sense. Like, I don't know if some people took a pay cut. I know it's 1995, so maybe these actors weren't getting paid as much as they do now.
This wasn't a, you know, Brad Pitt's making $20 million sort of picture.
No.
Not 95.
Not 95.
Not this film.
Not this film.
No.
But yeah, only 33. And then it made $101 million domestically, $228 million internationally. And that total for $330 million. Another movie making 10 times its budget.
Yeah. People went and saw this stupid movie.
They did, and they loved it. It was nominated for one Oscar for Best Film Editing.
Did it lose?
It did.
Good. Good, Seven. You're not an Oscar award-winning film. Fuck you.
Instead, it went to Apollo 13.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to beat.
It's going to be hard to beat. The other nominees were Babe, Braveheart, and Crimson Tide, the submarine movie with Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington, which is one of my favorite.
I have seen all of those movies.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of rare these days. I mean, for 90s films, I've seen probably most of the films that were nominated for any point. But it's harder these days. But yeah, fucking Babe. That'll do, pig.
That'll do, pig. Yeah, that was the year Braveheart won Best Picture. I think a lot of people thought, well, I don't know if people thought it was going to be Apollo 13 that year, but Apollo 13 was a fantastic movie, but so was Braveheart.
Yeah.
I do like that Babe was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah. Oh.
For Best Picture.
Yeah, nice.
I was like, way to go, George Miller. The Postman.
The Postman.
Also,
Kevin Costner?
That's what I was thinking. Let me look up real fast.
Who was in The Postman?
Because I'm like, the Kevin Costner's Postman was nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture? That doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, there was a time when Kevin Costner would fart and he'd get an Academy Award nomination.
But I've seen, okay, it was not.
Oh.
Kevin Costner's The Postman came out in 1997.
Oh.
I'm guessing.
What's this film then?
This might be Il Postino. It's an Italian movie that came out in 1994 in Italy, but probably came out in 1995 in America. So then they nominated, which happens. Foreign films get nominated for Best Picture. And Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, fuck. I love that fucking movie so much. I watched it the other night and cried just for old time's sake.
That's an Oscar-nominated movie for Best Picture.
Yeah, no, because it's flawless in every conceivable way. It is the second most, kind of the first most flawless film of Jane Austen's, you know, based on Jane Austen's work. Although I do love Pride and Prejudice more, I think that Sense and Sensibility in terms of period clothing and etiquette is more faithful, and it's flawless. God, that movie's so fucking good. You should watch it if you haven't. You know what? Instead of watching Seven, can we just talk about Sense and Sensibility? Can we talk about Alan Rickman in Sense and Sensibility? Because Alan Rickman up until that point had only played like villainous roles, and he finally got to play like the love interest, and he's Colonel Brandon, it's forever a babe. And like, oh my god, like fucking Kate Winslet's so good in it. And Hugh Grant, can we talk about that instead? Surprise, the twist ending of the Seven episode is that Seven sucks. Let's talk about Sense and Sensibility.
Well, let's talk about who's in Seven.
A bunch of predators. That's who's in Seven. A bunch of predators. I know that you make that face, but it is important to remind people that some of these actors are flawed pieces of shit. And I don't want to...
Has any of this been proven?
In
court?
With Kevin Spacey, it has, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Kevin Spacey's a piece of shit, and I don't feel like we should just sweep that under the rug for the sake of, tidy little podcast. I think it's important to remind folks that we don't condemn Kevin Spacey being a piece of shit.
I had no problem saying that Kevin Spacey's a piece of shit.
He's a huge piece of shit.
But you said the whole cast.
Well, yeah, because Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman are problematic in their own way, but no, it hasn't been, you know, proven in court.
Okay, well, on a podcast, you have to say allegedly.
Okay, so allegedly, they're pieces of shit. Does that change how we feel about Morgan Freeman? I actually don't know his story that well, so I can't say 100%. So I can't say much. I do enjoy a Morgan Freeman. And I enjoy a Brad Pitt, but these days I'm kind of bored with both of them.
Do you have a favorite Morgan Freeman movie?
Prince of Thieves.
That's a really good one.
Fuck, I love that movie so much growing up. I loved it so much growing up. I still love that film, even though it's so dumb.
Prince of Thieves is legit.
When he throws his giant scimitar into the stomach of the witch and it wobbles.
It makes her fly across back. The room.
And then when she lands, the sword goes...
You hear the gooey,
I can hear that noise.
The gooey wetness of her guts.
And I enjoy that more than I enjoyed any of the gooey wetness of the guts in this movie. And also, Alan Rickman. Fuck, man. And a little bit of Bryan Adams at the end. Fuck yeah, Prince of Thieves. Morgan Freeman, I can take or leave most of the time. I enjoyed him in Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty, of course.
You know, he's great
Shawshank
in Shawshank.
Redemption,
yeah.
He's amazing.
I'm not even looking at his IMDb. This is off the top of my head. But for me, his freckles in Prince of Thieves were really what did me in.
Yeah, I don't think I knew who he was before Prince of Thieves.
No.
When I was... Because Prince of Thieves came out in, like, the same or earlier in the
90s? Prince of Thieves came out in, what, like, 90...
Because this is 95, and I think...
That movie had to have come out in, like, 91. Because...
91.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that.
And you know how I knew that?
How did you know that?
We watched it as a kid when I lived... Well, we watched it as a kid, and as a kid in the house that I grew up in... Very vividly, I remember pretending to hang myself in the closet so that, you know, Robin Hood could come and save me. Oh, and my mom caught me and fucking flipped out.
I bet she did.
Yeah. understandably. Now, at the time, I was just a stupid idiot kid, but, you know, I was like six and pretending to hang myself from my closet, even though I couldn't tie a good enough knot, guys. Like, my body, it was fine. Anyways, and so I remember her screaming at me about that. So that's how I know that movie came out before we moved to California, is because that was the house that we lived in. Yeah, so that's how I knew when that movie came out. Also, I took the VHS to school to my music class so that my classmates could listen to the Bryan Adams song that plays at the end of it. And nobody was as into it as I was. And it's like a core memory of me standing there being like, you guys don't like this song? And they're all staring at me like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, but this song's a bop. And that's, you know, a core memory of how Maggie discovered music for movies. Prince of Thieves. Let's talk about that movie instead of Seven.
You know, I would love to talk about Prince of Thieves one day.
Just do a Robin Hood bonus episode.
That movie.
Watch Prince of Thieves, watch Men in Tights, watch the Russell Crowe one with Oscar Isaac and those terrible blue contacts.
Oh man, I forgot he was in Outbreak, which also came out the same year as Seven.
Which also has Gwyneth Paltrow in it?
No, Rene Russo.
Oh, her movie? Oh no, her movie was Contagion. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got Brad Pitt as the new-to-town cop.
Yeah.
And Morgan Freeman playing the...
who doesn't love yet another story of a veteran and a rookie working together on the last case the veteran's going to work on?
I love those. It's called a great cop drama.
Yeah, no, that's not my... I like to say I don't like cop dramas, but I don't like... conventional cop dramas. I like a good cop drama like Heat. That's a good fucking movie. I don't enjoy Seven. Do you have a favorite Brad Pitt film, Caveman?
Favorite Brad Pitt.
Yeah, you're always like dropping those little nuggets on me. Me being like, oh shit, now I have to find out.
I mean, I am a sucker for Legend of the Fall.
I love Legends of the Fall so goddamn much, it's not even funny.
I like when Brad Pitt's weird.
Yeah.
So I like 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
He hasn't been weird in a while. He's been humorous.
He's been conventional. If I had to pick my favorite film of his, it would probably be Legends of the Fall, followed by Ocean's 11.
He's so fun.
He's so fucking fun in Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. He's also really funny and different in Snatch.
Yeah, I don't like Snatch that much. Definitely didn't like 12 Monkeys.
Ever since I was in my late teens, I've been a fan of Meet Joe Black.
Yeah. Yeah, when he bounces off those cards like four times. Bing, 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 bing.
That's always been a favorite.
You made me
role.
Watch that movie when we were dating. You're like, this movie's important to me and you must watch it. And I was like, oh,
it's
shit.
It's true. I really had a thing with that movie. I don't know. It spoke to me somehow.
Anthony Hopkins is in that, right?
He is.
He's also in Legends of the Fall.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Screw him! Oh, fuck. I love Legends of the Fall. I will say that I enjoyed Bullet Train as a most recent Brad Pitt film.
That is one of his most recent ones, and he was really great in that.
I just don't care to watch Wolves. I just don't care.
Yeah, I'll watch that eventually.
Yeah. Like, sure, it's Clooney and Pitt, and they're kind of great together, but I'm also just like, meh.
Gwyneth Paltrow plays Brad Pitt's character's wife.
Yes, the doting, the poor woman. That poor fucking woman. Yeah. Like, she's only just there to be killed. Her writing shows it.
That is her role in the movie.
Her role in that movie is to be murdered, and it's every scene that she's in is just like, I'm the beautiful young wife, and I'm pregnant, and I'm going to be murdered. That's all her worth is in this fucking movie.
The movie's not about her. The movie's not even about their relationship, but it would have helped to have a little bit more character development.
Agency.
To help. Well, of course, but they didn't think about agency in the 90s.
They did in Silence of the Fucking Lambs.
Yeah, with all these men, like, constantly. staring at her and hitting on her. And
but Clarice was still strong. So, spoiler alert, folks.
It's we're doing too much for 2024.
We watched Seven and Silence of the Lambs basically back to back. Because next week we'll be talking about Silence of the Lambs. And it's going to be really hard for me to not just shit on this movie in favor of that film. But I'm going to try really hard to just keep it to...
I should have you watch Long Legs, because Long Legs is another movie that's been...
I don't wanna. Gwyneth Paltrow is in this movie.
She is.
You know what? There's a really funny... I'm pretty sure it's Brad Pitt, but there's this like there's a series of memes that talks about how Brad Pitt always takes after whatever his girlfriend at the time looks like, and you can see it. And this was at the time when Paltrow and Pitt were dating, and they both had the same haircut and like wore the same clothes. It was very funny.
Really?
Yeah, like they just kind of they looked like they were twins.
I didn't even know they dated.
Oh, you don't remember them dating? That was a huge thing in Hollywood at the time.
No, I only remember Aunt Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, no, him and Gwyneth Paltrow were like, it was supposed to be the thing, and then obviously it wasn't, but, you know, I think that she's, I don't know, fared better out there with her goop and her vagina candles and whatnot.
My mind is getting kind of blown, because I was looking at Gwyneth Paltrow's IMDb, and the third thing she ever did in 1991 was she played young Wendy in Hook.
You motherfucker, you don't know that that's Gwyneth Paltrow?
I mean, I haven't watched Hook in like 8 years, but
yeah,
if I were to watch it, you know how when you rewatch a movie years later and you're like, oh, I recognize that person. I didn't know they were that character that I've known this whole time.
But even like after she made it big and you would rewatch the movie.
My mind feels a little blown right now.
I love the Gwyneth Paltrow movie Sliding Doors. I have not seen it in a very long time.
I've seen that one. I like
that
one.
But it's a great film. I also loved her in... she was in a movie with Aaron Eckhart called Possession.
Possession.
It came out in 2002 and it is a romantic mystery drama about a couple of scholars... like student scholars who are trying to find a connection between two famous Victorian writers, a man and a woman who nobody knew are actually connected with each other. And it's a great fucking movie. And it's during that time when Gwyneth Paltrow was British in every film that she was in, you know, despite her terrible British accent.
Yeah.
And Aaron Eckhart is just so like bumbling in this, but it's so good. It also has Jeremy Northern and Jennifer Ely in it, and it's Lena Headey too. Lena Headey. It's Headey. It's just this great romantic story, and I love it. Shout out to Jessie. She knows. Possession's a great film, but that's probably my favorite Gwyneth Paltrow movie that I don't think anybody has ever seen. For God's sakes, it is a 64 on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's not a great film, but it's a great film.
My recommendation for people, if they haven't seen it, it's kind of a terrible movie, but I love watching it because it is so terrible and weird. But Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Yeah, God, I've only seen that movie once, and it was a weird fucking movie.
With her and Jude Law. Yeah. And Angelina Jolie.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody has seen a little movie called Spider-Man Homecoming, but Gwyneth Paltrow is kind of great in that, too. It's a smaller film. I don't think you've seen it. She's in it at the end. She's got, like, the tiniest of bit parts.
With the, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, okay, I know she's in...
Happy and Tony.
I was trying to think of Homecoming. I was like, okay, what happens in Homecoming that... Gwyneth Paltrow would show up.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You're playing tricks on
me. I was trying to be silly, because I don't want to talk about Seven.
Silly.
That's me.
Silly woman.
And also Kevin Spacey is in this movie, but he's a piece of shit. So.
Yeah, so moving on to the...
This movie had a pretty solid, like, character actor. Like, there's a handful of character actors that is like, oh, I vaguely know who that guy is.
Oh, yeah, like Arlie Ermey, yeah. Who, I mean, we all know mainly, you know, he was in Full Metal Jacket mm-hmm. and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Those were, like, his two really big ones.
We saw him recently in Toy Story 3 when we watched that for the show.
Of course.
you know, everybody knows him. Richard Roundtree, the guy who plays Dr. Cox from Scrubs. Like, it's a pretty solid... Richard Roundtree is not the guy who played Dr.
I remember, because I had seen... No. Yeah? Had I seen Scrubs? No, I must have... It must have been during one of my rewatches.
Yeah.
Where I had known him in Scrubs.
Yeah.
And then rewatched it.
John C. McGinley.
John C. McGinley, yeah. Where I'm like, hey, that's Dr. Cox.
I fucking love what Dr. Cox so fucking much. He's not my favorite character in Scrubs because that's the janitor, but he's a solid number three. Like, it's like the janitor, JD, and then Dr. Cox in terms of my favorite characters in Scrubs.
There's also an actor named Hawthorne James who plays the... he plays the night guard in the library.
Yeah, I'm looking at his IMDb photo right now, and I'm like, he looks familiar to me.
The main thing that I had... the only other thing I've seen him in... I know he's in The Color Purple, but... I have never seen The Color Purple, the original or the remake, but he's in Speed. He plays the bus driver and then gets shot.
Yeah.
And Sandra Bullock has to take over. So
good old Speed.
Yeah. So there is a small cameo in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
At the very beginning of the film, there is a crime scene that has nothing to do with the Seven Deadly Sins that Somerset is...
Investigating.
Yeah. And the victim of that first crime scene there was played by the writer of the movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, but...
it's sort of like when Stephanie Meyer appears in Twilight. It's a fun little author cameo that nobody actually cares about.
Or everything. I mean, the authors that are fun...
Yeah.
You got Stan Lee.
Yeah.
You know, he's always... Always, every single time you watch a Marvel film,
I miss Stan Lee.
The one thing that you're like waiting for is a Stan Lee cameo.
Not anymore.
Well, obviously, because that'd be really gross.
But we miss him. We miss him so much.
So the idea of this movie came from when the writer Andrew Kevin Walker moved to New York City in 1986. And he... had previously lived in the suburbs of Pennsylvania, and now he's in New York City. And
in so the '80s.
In the '80s. So
yeah,
what
a bad time to be in New York.
He felt very out of place there, and you know, there, of course, crime and drug abuse, and he was just working as a sales assistant for Tower Records at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He began writing a script about his bleak and, or he started writing a script about a bleak, gloomy city, didn't name it, but he was basing it off of his depressing time in New York. So he wrote this script, sent it to studios, some studios were interested. As the development of the script got further and further up the chain, of course they wanted to make changes to the story, and one of the changes that they wanted to do was not have such a bleak ending. They had it changed to where Kevin Spacey kills Brad Pitt and Somerset kills Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. So Kevin Spacey's still becoming lust and
envy.
Envy, that's right.
I mean, like, lust it was Brad Pitt in the 90s, and it is Kevin Spacey, so he could have become lust at some point.
I mean, we all lust after.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just going to be this big kill-off in a, like, a church. It was like a ending in a church, of course, for the Seven Deadly Sins.
Still bleak.
Coming to an end in a church.
God damn it.
His pregnant wife, like, takes off and leaves the city, and...
Yeah.
You know,
I would have enjoyed that ending more, just so that Gwyneth Paltrow could get the fuck out of there. You know, and go raise that little blonde baby that those two are going to have together.
And then at the same time, David Fincher had just done, you know, before David Fincher was a film director, he was a music video director, and he's done a ton of music videos.
Mm-hmm. We've gone over it.
We have. His very first movie was Alien 3, and he had... a terrible experience with Alien 3 because of the studio coming in and messing with his, essentially messing with his movie, adding things that he didn't want, taking away things. He said, "I'd rather die of colon cancer than make another movie." And so he really was on a road to just making a single film, even though the director's cut is pretty legitimate. You know, after looking at the script, he found himself captivated by John Doe's kind of getting, kind of getting trapped in John Doe's mind, finding this almost like getting trapped inside of evil. And so the whole idea of the script interested him enough to keep, you know, to keep going along with it and to eventually become the film's director. Something else that they changed in the script to make it a little more exciting was that chase scene from his apartment where they catch him, based off of the FBI keeping track of everybody's library.
Yes.
checkouts.
Which I think is something they did post 9/11, but I don't know if they did it in the 90s.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
I mean, these days they know everything about us, but yeah, it's all TikTok's fault.
It's all TikTok's fault, that's right. When they catch him, or catch him off guard unsuspectingly because of the whole FBI library thing, they added that scene just as, like, some extra...
Spice it up a little bit. Some extra make this drama. Movie longer than it needed to be.
They really grounded this one with the way that it's like a slow chase. Like, we are chasing him, but we're also going to be very cautious going about it. I don't know. It was more of meticulously, cautiously pursuing instead of...
It's a full recklessness.
More reckless character or action hero.
He also broke his hand during filming, which is why he's in a cast for the latter part of the film. I guess even in some scenes before he hurts his hand in the chase, he's, you know, his hand is hidden away because that was a legit injury that Brad Pitt had. Do you find the characters in this movie likable at all?
Yes, a little bit. Like, I like Morgan Freeman's character.
Morgan Freeman and Gwyneth Paltrow are the two characters that I enjoyed. I think that Brad Pitt's character is awful. He's hot-headed. He's homophobic. I found Brad Pitt's character so unlikable. So unlikable. That at no point did I enjoy seeing him on screen or in any way sympathize for him.
I mean, yeah, he is that hot-headed partner who doesn't think before he acts.
And he's the 90s macho man, which is so... It's not only been done to death, but is such a shitty version of a person.
I wouldn't even think he's macho.
Well, no, not macho. Well, yeah, he does kind of have that machismo. I mean, he uses way too many gay slurs.
When does he use gay slurs?
A ton. That dude drops the other F word quite a few times in that film.
Was it him? I thought John C. McKinley was doing all that.
Yeah, no, that was a little bit too, but it was more like Brad Pitt used, you know.
Who's he referring to? Was he talking about John Doe?
Everybody, like, yeah, like he just, I don't know. I didn't enjoy, one of the reasons I don't enjoy this movie, one of the many reasons, is because it's a 90s edgy film. And now, as a human being, do not like 90s edginess. I'm a 90s kid. I was born in '84. I grew up in the 90s. So, like, I get a lot of the pop culture, but these days I'm just like, A, ugh, gross. And B, it wasn't a good time to be a woman, somebody on the LGBTQ lineup, neurodivergent lineup, you know, strange. Like, if you weren't a white dude in the 90s, you got made fun of a lot. And
you weren't a white dude ever for most of history.
I know, but I don't... Okay.
Not every film has to be...
But this is true. But I don't like it now, right? Like, I don't particularly look back on that time and romanticize it. And I also don't like that this movie is edgy and gross for the sake of being edgy and gross. There is a version of this story that could be done, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, Silence of the Lambs style, where it is a little bit more noir, it is a little bit more psychologically thrilling, instead of just gross. Here's a giant fat dead body. Here's all these homicide victims and brutal scenes of them and what has happened to them. Here's, I mean, for God's sakes, like, I'm shocked that they didn't show, like, what happened to the hooker in the lust part. Because, like, that was a thing to do in the 90s. It was to be gross and edgy and dark and in your face. And I don't like that. The music gave me a headache. I did not enjoy the opening credits. I don't enjoy serial killer stories, first of all. It's not my jam. I do not like true crime. I realize it happens and it's out there. And sometimes I, too, get into a Wikipedia deep dive of things I shouldn't be reading. But I'm not a big true crime fan. I wasn't then. I am not now. I don't like edgy for the sake of just doing it. I don't like gross for the sake of being gross. There's so many aspects of this movie that I don't like. That's not my cup of tea. I will say the set design was pretty good. And that's kind of the nicest thing I have to say about this film. I also,
this film even opens up with a Nine Inch Nails kind of remix of Closer.
And the opening credits is just,
I mean, if you want 90s edgy.
Yeah, I know.
That's why I love it.
Of course you love it.
Of course I love it.
This movie is made for you. If I had maybe seen this movie, if I had somehow gone most of my life without this movie being spoiled for me, like the second it came out, right? Because it was spoiled. I mean, even as a kid, it came out in 95, so I was 11. It's 10, 11 when this movie came out. Like
what's in the box is...
I, to this day, will say that. Like, I was at work the other day, and my boss got a package, and I was like, what's in the box? This movie was spoiled for me basically instantly because nobody cared about spoilers back then. They just threw them out freely. I mean, they still do, but, you know. And so maybe if I had seen this movie from beginning to end, sat down, knew nothing about it, and went into it, I might view it differently. But it's been done to death. It's been made of fun of to death. It's been spoiled for me for years.
It's been done to death?
Well, like pop culture poked at, sort of.
I mean, there's been a lot of detective things that have
come out, like tried to emulate or tried to also just be edgy and gross.
Like first season of Hannibal, got a lot of Seven in it.
Yes, but that's also Brian Fuller just going full Brian Fuller.
Well, of course,
but I was reading here on IMDb, others compared Seven unfavorably to The Silence of the Lambs and The Usual Suspects. And it's like, it's unfavorable because it's the worst of those three films, but you can't not compare the two biggest, like, detective thrillers of the 90s, right? Or in this case, the three, although I saw The Usual Suspects once and I don't remember much about it. But again, that's another movie that's been so completely ruined for me by pop culture. I don't know if I'm going to enjoy it going into it.
No, you wouldn't like.
Yeah.
You wouldn't like it.
And so I have to compare it to Silence of the Lambs. And Silence of the Lambs is a movie that I prefer more because I think that it handles everything with a bit more of a deft hand and is not just edgy for the sake of edgy and gross for the sake of gross. Blech. Like, I'm surprised there's not a lot of titties in this movie. But there's enough blood and gore, and it just,
True Detective is another one. That's the other one I was thinking of. True Detective is another one that's got a lot of that Seven vibe to it.
Yeah, and it's not a vibe I like.
Oh, that's fine. I mean,
but that's okay, right? I don't like edgy, dark, gross cop thrillers. I don't like cop thrillers in general. I like my cops to be the first half of Law and Order, and then I like the Order part of it. Right. And I don't even watch Law and Order that much anymore. I like my cops to be the guys from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Those are basically the only cops that I root for anymore, is the team from the 99th Precinct, because the rest of them, I just don't care. And I knew that I was going to go into this movie not enjoying it. I was shocked at how little I enjoyed it. But that is my opinion as a human, as a full-fledged human being who's just isn't into this sort of stuff. I understand the importance of this film and why people like it, but I am not those people. So, Caveman, if you want to talk about why you like this film, feel free. I will now mentally check out and stare at my computer while you ramble.
Oh, boy. You know, I think Somerset would really enjoy Pottery Throwdown. I think that would help him a lot more than the metronome.
Motherfucker. I mean, everybody should enjoy The Great Pottery Throwdown because it's the most perfect show.
I think that would really help him sleep at night.
Caveman, why do you bring up sleeping in Pottery Throwdown?
Because it's your favorite way to fall asleep.
It is my favorite way to fall asleep. Yours is The Simpsons.
It is.
And some people, it's True Crime Podcasts. I don't get it. But we all have our different things. I did write down... the worst sound machine ever. Or the worst white noise machine ever. Yeah.
Having a metronome. I remember because of this movie, I went to the library and checked out... it was Dante's Divine Comedy.
A fucking course you did. How old were you when you saw this movie?
I wrote down...
You didn't see this movie.
I didn't see this in the theaters. No, I was too young.
There's no way your parents would have let you watch this movie before you were 18.
No, I probably watched it before I was 18.
Yeah.
But not in theaters. Yeah. Because, yeah, I was probably only 14 when this movie came out. I wrote down everything that Morgan Freeman writes down in the in the library.
Yeah.
Like all the books that he checks out. Like, yeah. I freeze framed those books.
Oh, my God.
And I went to the library and looked them up. I still have Divine.
If you pull it out from that little... Is it seriously right next to you? Oh, my God. Divine Comedy. Dante. Oh, autographed by the author.
God, that'd be impossible.
When did this version... This is I've got a very old leather-bound book in my hands.
It's very old.
1932 is the copyright. And 1950. So I'm assuming this book was probably from 1950.
It's probably from the 50s, yeah.
It's green. It's got that sort of classic, like, cardboardy leather feel. It smells amazing. Oh, my God. Oh, it smells amazing. I have never read Dante's Divine Comedy. I don't plan on reading Dante's Divine Comedy. If I want to in any way dip my toe into Dante's The Divine Comedy, I'm going to listen to Hozier's Unreal Unearth, because that's what that album is based on. And that's a great fucking piece of art. Yeah, but I know all about it, you know, because again, pop culture has seeped this as being important into our minds.
I also looked into...
The binding is completely falling apart.
I also looked into, you know, Chaucer's Tales.
Yeah, which we had to read in AP British Lit, and fucking unreadable, that story. Mainly because it's written in Middle English. Or Old English or whatever, but it's, you know, that's a tough read for a modern audience, because what the fuck are they saying? Again, if I want to watch Chaucer's, you know, Canterbury Tales, I'm just going to put on A Knight's Tale.
Which is, I think, the only reason I knew who Jeff was in A Knight's Tale was because of Seven.
Yeah.
Because without Seven, I wouldn't even have looked into who Geoffrey Chaucer was. And when he's introduced in A Knight's Tale, I would have just, you know, okay. Yeah.
That is a very obscure joke in that
movie.
It is
a really obscure joke. Not a lot of people are, like, up on their Geoffrey Chaucer.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that movie is pure gold, five stars.
Can we talk about that movie instead? Can we talk about Heath Ledger instead of Brad Pitt?
I mean, we should be doing some Heath Ledger for some bonus episodes.
We really should. God, and that guy was great.
The fact that his only movie on this list was Dark Knight, which was a great performance.
Yeah, don't get us wrong, but, like, Ten Things, Knight's Tale,
yeah.
Fucking, you know, Brokeback Mountain. My mom and I went and saw Brokeback Mountain the day after you and I made out for the first time.
Nice. Great thing to watch after you make out with somebody.
I know. That's what I remember about that movie. Is I was just like, I made out with that dude last night. Yeah.
Anyway. So, a line that I like towards the beginning of the film is when they are delivering, or when they go to the coroner's office to look at the first body, and Somerset and Mills are in there, and the coroner comments on the dark lighting by saying, "Ooh, very moody." And it makes me laugh when he says it, just commenting on
a little fourth wall break
about how dark. I mean, Fincher movies have always been dark. I mean, Fight Club, very dark. The Game very, very dark. A panic room, very dark.
I think this is kind of... I mean, I haven't seen The Social Network yet. We have to watch it eventually, next couple of months. My understanding of Fincher's films has definitely expanded because of this podcast. And it all kind of boils down to, I don't like his style.
I understand that. I really do.
And I understand why you like it. Which is actually something I'd rather talk to you off podcast than on, because it has a lot to do with your how you were raised and your sort of...
To counteract my Christian upbringing, yes. I gotta be edgy.
Yeah, and how you broke out of the confinement of your religious upbringing and what it said to you as a white man in the 90s. So it's
my way of rebelling.
I don't think that it still is your way of rebelling, but I think that you sought out his films as a way to rebel because those are the types of films that you knew you weren't supposed to be watching.
I connected to them at a young age because of my upbringing.
I also think that
now it's more of a nostalgia thing.
Films, yes. And I also think that he picks films that are, you know, more connected to a central, you know, like his characters all of his male characters kind of have the same shitty thing going for them. I mean, Ben Affleck is just as bad as Edward Norton, who's just as bad as Brad Pitt in this movie. He's just as bad as fucking everything Mark Zuckerberg has ever done or ever will. And I think I get why you like it, but it doesn't speak to me as anything but 90s edginess that I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
Even still, even to this day, his films are, I'm just like, what the fuck, who cares? Sorry, I just looked at IMDb and I was like, the Seattle Times saying that Seven would be unendurable without Freeman and Spacey, which is also kind of true because Brad Pitt is such an annoying hothead in this film.
Well, those actors specifically?
Possibly.
Or the characters. Like, of course you need the characters.
I don't know. I mean, most films are unendurable with Kevin Spacey these days. God, he sucks. But anyway. It's just, you know what? It's such a shame. It's not a shame that he's a piece of shit, but he did make movies that I liked.
He did make movies that I liked.
Like, I'm a rare American Beauty apologist. I think that's a great film. I haven't seen it in a very long time.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember liking it when I saw it.
I remember liking it a lot when I saw it. I remember that movie hit for me.
I mean, I do like Usual Suspects. Yeah. I do like...
A Bug's Life. We have to watch Baby Driver, and he is all up in that bitch.
He is, but I like him as... I like with this movie... that he's a villain, and you can hate him.
Yeah.
Because he's playing a villain.
And he's also
and he is a villain
barely
in real life.
In it.
He is barely in it. And he's not in Baby Driver a lot, but he's also a villain.
Mm.
Another thing that I always find funny in this movie is Morgan Freeman's character cannot type.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been doing this job forever. And he's, first of all, he's still using a typewriter.
Yeah.
And he's just doing the chicken peck. Like, one key at a time, and you just watch him type the whole movie. Anytime he's in front of a typewriter, it's click, 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 click. Just
I don't think
one finger out on each hand, just click, click, click.
One thing that, like, 90s cop films, and cop films even, you know, previous to that, they never actually show the amount of paperwork that cops actually have to do. And so it does seem like, well, of course he's a detective. He doesn't need to type. So why would he learn how to type? But I learned how to type at a keyboard in school, but also kind of because I wanted to teach myself how to type, right? And like, so yeah, there was a while there where I did the chicken peck when I was younger. But nowadays, you know, I learned how to do the proper technique. And I just think that that shows the character's sort of own kind of... pig-headedness to not learn how to type and to still use chicken peck. I think that anybody who's still chicken pecks is doing it out of determination and the need to feel right when they are wrong. I enjoyed Morgan Freeman's character to an extent. I liked the switchblade. I liked his connection with Gwyneth Paltrow. You know, that one moment in the coffee scene.
Yeah,
is,
in the diner or wherever they're talking about whether or not she wants to keep the baby or not.
Supposedly you can see Kevin Spacey in the background of that.
Oh, interesting.
I think that he pops up a lot more in the background of things in this movie than most people, obviously than people caught on at the beginning. But then, you know, even still people are like, oh, what? He's where?
If you want to see a good cop movie where they show how much paperwork police actually have to do?
Mm-hmm.
Hot fuzz.
Yes, motherfucker. The greater good.
Another moment I really love about in this movie that it's so random, but I grin every time. It's Arlie Remy in the office.
Yeah.
And he's sitting at a desk that isn't his, and the phone rings. And he just picks up the phone and says, "This ain't even my desk," and hangs it up. It's so random, yeah. But he did such a good job.
Arlie Remy is great.
Brad Pitt with the Cliff's Notes, because he's trying to read Divine Comedy and Chaucer's stuff. And
I remember Cliff Notes.
I do remember Cliff Notes.
Those little, I would always walk past in Barnes & Noble. There might still be, I haven't been in Barnes & Noble in years, but there still might be a little stack of.
I mean, I'm sure Amazon does, but yeah, I'm sure.
Bright yellow books.
I used to go to Barnes & Noble often just for fun because it was something to do and it was out of the heat and I love books.
Mm-hmm.
And
then the second you walk in, you immediately have to poop.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But then once that gets clear, you can just slowly walk through each aisle. And
my aunt used to go in with her daughters, and they would each choose a book, and every week they'd go in and read a chapter until they finished the book. So they never bought it, but they would go in and read until they were finished with it. And I always thought that was really funny and, you know, subversive. I miss Barnes & Noble's DVD and music collection.
Music section. Even though it was like five times more expensive.
It was so expensive, but you knew you could find some good things in there. Like, that's where you went to look first for some good stuff, and then you would check Best Buy, because occasionally Best Buy would have some really obscure things, too.
I think it's because I've seen this movie so many times, I've caught on to certain things that are happening that your eye may not be completely focused on. The night that Somerset and Mills are over at his place for dinner, their dinner's over. Gwyneth Paltrow's probably doing dishes or is in bed or something.
Yeah, where a wife should be.
Exactly. Yeah. And the boys are playing detective in his living room, kind of looking through evidence and stuff. Brad Pitt's drinking beer. Morgan Freeman's got a glass of wine. And Brad Pitt refills Morgan Freeman's wine glass, but refills it all the way to the top instead of just, you know, how you're supposed to fill a wine glass.
Yeah, it's how I fill a wine glass versus how a wine glass is supposed to be filled. And it's also not a wine glass. It's a water glass. Like, it's like a tall tumbler glass.
Well, it's got a stem.
No, it doesn't.
There's no stem?
No, it's a full-on, like regular drinking glass, and it's filled all the way up to the top.
Well,
yeah.
But as soon as he grabs it, he looks at it, and he's just like, "Jesus Christ!" Like, his eyes just widen, and you can tell he's just like, "Holy fuck, that's a lot of wine."
They've fallen asleep on each other. I thought that was cute.
Oh,
I will say those two men had pretty good chemistry.
Yeah,
more than pretty good chemistry. Like that, you know. As much as I dislike Brad Pitt's character, he was a good foil for Morgan Freeman, and vice versa. You know what really takes me out of this movie and What's is a that? Huge pet peeve?
What's that?
There is never, ever been a time where a delivery driver is that prompt and on time. Not once in the history of this world has a delivery driver been like, "I'll have that to you by 7 and actually shows up at
and,
7.
Well, he was paid to bring it
He was
on
paid,
time.
And he was a little late.
He was a little late.
Yeah.
But he was paid extra by John Doe to bring it early. Also, another funny moment that I like in that scene is when there's a dead dog in the road and John Doe looks at it and is just like, "I didn't do that."
I hate to admit that Kevin Spacey does a good job in this film. Obviously anymore, that guy can eat shit and die, but I get why this movie was big for him, because he is the most real of all these characters in that he plays that sort of dead-eyed psychopath very well.
Yeah.
And definitely because he himself is a dead-eyed psychopath.
Allegedly. 7's a very straightforward kind of movie.
Yeah, it jumps right into it.
It jumps right into it.
There's no wasted time, which is insane considering how fucking long and unnecessary this movie is.
Movie starts on a Monday and it ends on Sunday.
7 days.
Yeah, 7 days, but not 7 murders in 7 days. No. There are, you know, Monday and Tuesday, you get gluttony and greed. Wednesday is a break.
And on Wednesday, he rested.
Yeah, Wednesday, he rested. Thursday, you get sloth, but Friday, there's nothing. Saturday is Lust, and then Sunday is everything else, Pride, Envy, and Wrath, all on the same day. Yeah, and it really
fucking religion fucks people up.
It really,
like,
I mean, you got this, and you got
Silence of the Lambs,
Da Vinci Code.
Like, there's so many movies about just like these poor motherfuckers who are so messed up because religion told them that they couldn't be the way that they were.
I think Zodiac Killer even pulled stuff from the Bible.
Yeah, like it's just it just kind of goes to show you that fucking religion messes you up. And I'm not saying that it causes you to go out and murder people, because not everybody does that. But, like, it really fucks up some people in unnecessary and dumbass ways. And that's my main takeaway from this film. So many of my takeaways from this movie. Look, I understand that this movie is a classic. I don't necessarily agree that it's a modern masterpiece, as people all over IMDb are, you know, raving it to be, but it's also not a film for me. It's a film for you, Caveman. And I guess I'm glad you like it, but I'm never going to watch it again.
That's fine.
There's no reason I would ever see in my life to be like, yeah, sure, I'll watch Seven again. Like, my mom said I couldn't as a kid, and I'm just going
to
go ahead.
Should have listened to your parents.
I should have listened to my fucking mother. Yeah. Sorry, Mom. I failed you.
Are there any
again.
Other movies that your mom has? I know you've said it before, I thought.
American History X.
Which is not on this list.
Clockwork Orange.
Which is also not, which actually, the fact that there's not a single
Kubrick movie
on this.
Thank Christ.
Oh, wait, no. Wait. There was The Shining.
Oh, yeah. But still, like, thank God we don't have to watch 2001.
I mean, I could sit through 2001. But.
Yeah.
There are some really good things about 2001. It's not particularly my film.
Mm-hmm.
It's very long, but there are some for being a late 60s film.
The sets
they use, the camera work they do, and the visual effects that they were able to achieve in the 60s is all very impressive.
Yeah.
And really the only reason I like watching that film is to watch just that kind of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Is why I like that movie, but not necessarily for the story. I think it's a pretty basic.
Yeah, and again,
story.
It's been beat to death with the hammer of pop culture.
Pop culture has beat that
horse. I've never seen that movie, but I have seen that movie because I've seen
every
other movie that has come.
Everybody
since.
And their grandmother has seen 2001 in one way or another. The Simpsons, South Park, Family Guy,
Barbie, like fucking everybody.
Yeah, even live action
movies,
television shows have all parodied it because it is such a groundbreaking piece of pop culture and filmmaking for its time.
Mm-hmm.
But not on this list, so you don't have to worry about it.
Thank God, because I wouldn't.
And it wouldn't be a bonus episode because I'm not going to force you to sit through that.
And that's the mark of a truly good husband. Thank you, my dear.
So, Maggie, what would you give 7 out of 5 stars?
By the way, I really, just really quickly, the fact that it has often been tagged as seven in, also
seven in. So seven in.
It's like Mathrigan.
Mathrigan.
Yeah. There's been a lot of
Fanforstic.
Fanforstic. Yeah, this is seven of it all. This is seven of it all. So seven in of it. Anyways, it's stupid. I don't like this movie, but I understand why it is culturally important. So based on that, I'm going to give it a 2.5. That's what my gut's telling me.
Wow.
I would have rather watched Forrest Gump over this movie any day.
Gross.
Literally any day I'd rather watch Forrest Gump than watch this fucking film. And I did rate Forrest Gump lower, but that is because Forrest Gump lost an entire point for that one stupid fucking John Lennon moment. This is entirely on the basis of what it has done for pop culture and the film industry. So I will give it a 2.5 and no more. But I can dock it if anybody were to really push me on it. So that's what you get. That's the most you get out of it. It had good set design. And that's what you could put on the poster. Good set design, Maggie - Movie Mingle Podcast. What about you, darling?
This is one of my favorite Fincher films. It's like this, The Game, and Fight Club.
If you give this movie a 5-star, I swear to God, I'm coming across this fucking table.
I'm not giving this movie a 5-star.
Thank God.
I'm giving this movie 4 stars.
Fine.
I do really love this story, the directing, the moody atmosphere, the dirty, grungy 90s of it all. I really connect with, and I love this era of Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
Fair. Art is subjective, and subjectively, we have different opinions on this film. And that's okay.
And I've said it before, I'll say it again. Everyone should check out Love, Death, and Robots on, I believe it's Netflix.
Netflix, yeah.
And
wait, what does that have to do with?
Season 3, Episode 2 is an episode called Bad Traveling.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by David Fincher.
Oh.
And it was written by Andrew Kevin Walker. So the two of them reunited from...
Is it a fucking bummer?
It's a voyage on the open seas. They might have been pirates. And they get attacked by a monster. So yeah, it is a bummer. But Love, Death, and Robots is a fantastic series. It's an anthology series. Every episode's different. And it's all... created, animated by different animation houses. All 3 seasons really feature some really, really great ones. So,
yeah, I'd rather watch that instead of this.
And yeah, that's, well, you know, I love recommending things for people. So that is something people should check out. So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
Western culture, consumer culture is very purposefully created these completely irrational expectations that marriage must at all times be based on passion, on sex, on relentless emotional intensity, when it's so obvious that these things stem from novelty, so the whole concept's a complete fallacy.
Wow, well, I guess there's no point in us staying married then.
Right.
Almost 20 years. Let's give up now. Thanks, Oscar.
Let's give it all up.
Is that from Ex Machina?
No.
The marriage, or that, not the Marriage Story, that was Adam Driver.
That was Adam Driver.
But the thing that he was in with Jessica Chastain.
Yes,
and about, it's about fucking, I don't remember what it's
something,
called.
Something from a marriage?
Scenes from a Marriage.
Scenes from a Marriage.
You see his dick in that one. Have I mentioned that?
You have a few times.
That you see his dick?
That you see his dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know what it looks like.
Yeah, and you showed me, and so now I know what it looks like too. So.
Excellent. Lucky us.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, Maggie.
Yeah, honey.
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made 7 better?
I might have enjoyed it more, but I don't know if it would have made me like the movie more. I would have been happier to see him in it and be able to look at his face.
Sure.
Than I would have been to watch this movie as a whole. So, maybe?
Maybe. Well, 2nd question. Mm-hmm. Which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is cutting him in for Kevin Spacey, Christopher Plummer style, because I think that's what we should do for all Kevin Spacey roles, is just delete him from it and import in another actor from literally any other generation, including Oscar Isaac Black and White.
Put Oscar Isaac in every Kevin Spacey role.
Yes. Well, I kind of like the idea of doing it with Christopher Plummer. Like, well, I think,
yeah,
that,
but he's dead.
Well, I know, but which is a bummer.
It is.
But yeah, no, like, go ahead and just replace Kevin Spacey with Oscar Isaac across the board.
I mean, I would love to watch Oscar Isaac in that Beyond the Sea movie.
Oh, yeah, he would have done a great job. The voice,
Bobby Darin, the Bobby Darin biopic. Just, I mean, sing and dance. He can sing and dance. And
Oscar Isaac, do a goddamn musical.
I know.
Please.
Right?
Please. For the lack of screen time. I would say maybe like make Oscar Isaac Mills, because I think he would have been somewhat more of a sympathetic character, even though he plays angry very well. But he also does play crazy really well. So I think that he would have been good as John Doe. I could have seen it. I mean, I couldn't believe that a man that handsome would have to resort to murder because, like, that's silly, man. Like, go get laid instead. Just replace Kevin Spacey in everything that he's ever done professionally with Oscar Isaac, except for the shit that he's done since getting canceled, which nobody has watched. Yeah, because he can keep those pieces of shit. But, yeah, you know, I don't know if I would have liked this movie more had Oscar been in it, but at the very least, I could have looked at his face and been like, aww. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on 7, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. As ever, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast and write us any of your questions, comments, and concerns to MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. We love getting your emails. Please feel free to rate and review this podcast 5 stars or whatever you feel we need. Oh, hello, producer Robin. Across the board on your favorite podcast platform of choice, and feel free to tell your friends about us because I still think this is a fun little podcast and I wish we had more listeners, although we do love all of the listeners who are a part of the show. So thank you for coming along on the ride with us. It really means the world. Next week is our 50th episode, which is insane. Obviously, we've done a few more than 50 because of the bonus episodes, but still, 50 is pretty nuts, and I'm very, very proud of that. So yeah, we'll be talking about The Silence of the Lambs, my more preferred 90s cop drama than Seven, but I am nonetheless quite excited to talk about that film because I think that it holds up and is wonderful. Spoiler alert, I think it's great. Until then, please take care of yourself. Keep an eye on, you know, on your six, you know, pay attention to who's around you, and I don't know. Just don't go anywhere that Kevin Spacey is. Now go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar?
I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Toga. Toga. Toga.